waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife and the woods are just outside your way. So get outside and find it in the Maine outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Well, thank you, and good evening, and we're so happy to have you with us tonight on Maine Outdoors. As you know, we are Maine's longest-running outdoor talk radio program. We've been around since year one.
Since Shep was a pup.
You bet, since Shep was a pup.
More than that.
Yeah, yeah. So nice to have you with us. We have a good show lined up tonight. We have two interesting telephone guests we'll be talking with during the hour, and of course, we are a talk radio program. That means that we welcome your input, and if you'd like to be on our program tonight, we have a 1-800 number that you can call, which is
1-800-966-1039, and dial the whole number even if you're local.
Yes, sir. And I'd like to introduce our crew, and then I'll introduce our phone guests. First, our crew, the engineer, the bewhiskered Kenny Rogers lookalike in there behind the bulletproof glass, Mr. Scotty Bates. Take a bow, Scotty.
Yes. Good evening, Paul, and good evening all you folks out there. And welcome to the show.
And your sidekick is at home resting up and doing
resting,
well.
But he said he's going to be here next week.
All right. Well, we look
great to have him back.
All right. You bet. We look forward to seeing Jim. And your other partner in broadcast crime, where is he tonight?
I think he's way up in Labrador or northern Quebec, maybe, fishing.
Northern Quebec.
Oh, is he? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I hope he's having a good time. I'm sure he is. Yeah. He loves to wet a line.
Yes.
And our co-host, who's a registered Maine master guide, and he's an author of a lot of great fishing books, my friend Robert F. Lehman.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Nice to have you here, sir.
Well, it's my pleasure. My pleasure, Paul.
All right. Tonight we're going to, as you may or may not know, some exciting news, and I think we announced it last week right here on the show. But the Atlantic Salmon Federation has announced that they have established a pact with the commercial fishermen over off the Greenland Straits. They're going to, I guess it's what they call a buyout. They're going to give, I think I heard like $4 million are going to, what they're basically doing is buying out the salmon fishermen, the commercial fishermen. And the idea being that if they don't fish commercially for all the tons and tons of salmon, this may help the salmon to kind of restore themselves. Right, Bob?
Oh, we hope so. That's the greatest thing. That happened back here in the late 70s, early 80s, you know. Same type of thing. Only went for 3 or 4 years. This time it's 12 years.
That's
so
right.
There'll be a moratorium, you might say, for 12 years.
Okay.
They're bound to get some. You'd think they'd get some in their nets, but they won't be actually going after salmon like they have been.
Okay, and we're going to have the spokesman. I think he's the regional director for the ASF, which is the Atlantic Salmon Federation, a fellow named Andy Good. And Andy has agreed to talk with us. And if you have any comments or questions for Andy, we welcome those at 1-800-966-1039. We'll connect up with Andy right after the outdoor trivia question. Then after the 7:30 break, we'll be talking to Dan Rogalski. He's an Irishman, Dan Rogalski.
Sounds like it, yeah. Oh, no kidding about it.
And he's over there in New Hampshire, and I call him the Pemmican Man, and he has manufactured pemmican. Now, I don't know if you know what that is. If you don't, stay tuned and you'll find out.
Right.
All right. I tried some of it, by the way, today, Bob, and it was pretty darn good. Pretty good.
Uh-huh.
So if you're into the survival mode, I've always been fascinated by people who survive in the woods and folks like Daniel Boone who lived off the land. And those who did live off the land, not only the Native Americans, but also the trappers in the Northwest, a lot of them lived on this pemmican.
Yeah, that's
pretty good. It must be pretty good stuff if you can live on it.
We look forward to that.
Yeah, so we'll find out about that right after the 7:30 break. Right now, though, it is time for Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwoods Sporting Journal and Maine Outdoor Publications. And incidentally, if you're interested in signing up for a subscription to the journal, you can do that by calling Alicia during the week, Monday through Friday, The office number there is 732-4880. And if you buy the Northwood Sporting Journal at the newsstand, we think that's great. We appreciate that. But if you get a subscription, you can save yourself quite a bit of money. So if you're interested in that, give Alicia a call, 732-4880. The Moose Lottery drawing took place this Saturday over in Skowhegan at the fairgrounds. Meant to get over there, couldn't make it, had to catch up on all the chores. But if you were not drawn, well, I feel your pain. Neither was I nor most of the guys that I know that applied for a permit. If you were a lucky winner of a moose permit, we'd like to hear from you. You must be excited about that. So give us a call and tell us all about that. But anyway, the list is available. You can get it online on the IFNW website. I checked it out today and scrolled through the names for the relatives that I had who applied, and not a soul there, Bob.
Really?
But, you know, I still got some meat in the freezer,
say,
so I'm all right.
Yeah, right.
I'm okay.
Well, you gave me, as we were talking about it earlier, some moose heart.
You
sliced,
like that,
sliced
don't you?
Quite thin. That was the best meat I think I ever ate. And I've fed it to some, you know, guests and things. They didn't know what it was, and they couldn't believe how good it was.
Oh, yeah, it's
moose
delicious.
Heart.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Unbelievably good.
Yeah, I like it better than the liver.
No question about it.
You fry it up with onions, do you, or do you take it straight?
Well, a few onions, yeah, it's good, but just plain.
Yeah.
Just plain, it's great. Fantastic.
Sliced thin.
Sliced quite thin, yeah. Well, just the way you sent it to us.
Yeah. Good. Glad you enjoyed that.
Oh.
Anyway, if you did win a moose permit, congratulations to you, and we wish you the very best of luck next fall. If you need a hunting partner, give me a call.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. The deer harvest numbers finally, we've been waiting since last November for the deer tally. And, you know, when I worked for Fish and Wildlife, it was usually March before we got those numbers.
Oh, yeah, always.
And the outdoor writers used to call and complain to me.
Right.
Now it's June.
I used to call and complain to you.
You did, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it was a lot better then than it is now. Now you got to wait till June. Anyway, the numbers are out. The tally is out. And I understand this is not official. I didn't get this from the department, but I got it from somebody who's close to the department. Said the figures were about... The harvest was about 27,000 this fall, which is about what it was the year before.
Has been,
yeah.
Pretty close to that.
Lower than it used to be.
A long way from what it used to be, 44,000, 45,000.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, incredible. Yep. Anyway, that's the scoop on that. And speaking of that, the new deer biologist, Nathan Biber, I'm not sure how you pronounce that, but anyway, he'll be with us 2 weeks from tonight. He'll be our studio guest. He's been at the helm there, Fish and Wildlife, running the deer research lab there for about a year, and he'll be with us to talk about the number of deer permits they're going to issue and how they arrived at those decisions. So join us in 2 weeks for Nathan Biber.
It should be an interesting night, huh?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Let's see. I think it's time for...
Well, I've got something I want to add here real quick.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Yes,
sure.
Yes, it's not only is fishing season, but it's bluegrass season.
You betcha.
Bluegrass.
Yes, and the first one of the year, the first Blistered Fingers... Bluegrass Festival. That's coming up this coming weekend.
Okay.
The shows actually start on Wednesday, and they run through till Sunday morning. The folks can actually, according to the thing here, can get into the grounds starting today to camp. And a lot of people do go there early to camp and just field pick and have a good time. So that's a good start of the season. It's probably the premier Bluegrass Festival, at least definitely in the state of Maine, if not New England.
And where is that again?
That's at the Litchfield Fairgrounds in Litchfield, Maine.
Litchfield, Maine.
Right. Starting Wednesday, the music starts Wednesday, the commercial music Wednesday till Sunday, and the field picking, probably from now on, there'll be lots of field picking.
Now, will you be there picking the bass?
I don't know if I'll
make
it this year or not. I have in the past, and it's a great time.
Now, how about Emmy Lou Harris? Is she going to show up?
I don't see her on there. I see Blue Highway, Little Roy. He's always puts on a good show, Little Roy and Lizzie. Michael Cleveland and Flame Keeper and Misty Mountaineers, of course the Blistered Fingers Band will be there.
All right.
So it should be a great time.
Okay. You probably don't know who Emmy Lou Harris is, right?
Oh, yes.
Oh, I thought you were too young to know.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. No. Bob, you know Emmy Lou Harris, right?
I never heard of her.
She's not a fisherman. She's not a fisherman.
That's right.
Okay. Now, Bob has a little fishing report. Do we have his intro music?
Ooh. Yes, we do.
We do.
I'm the big boss bass.
Yeah.
And you work for me.
Have you ever caught a bass, Bob? Do you ever bass?
You bet I have.
So you bass fish?
Oh, heavens, yes.
Well, those rumors are wrong that you don't.
They are wrong because I love to catch bass.
So you don't have anything.
I just don't want to interfering with my salmon and trout fishing.
Oh, okay.
But if I go bass fishing, I know where to go and how what to use and the whole nine yards.
In fact, and you don't.
I've made shows, TV shows.
Oh.
Fishing bass.
So this is just a nasty rumor that you hate bass.
But you know, down at Grand Lake Stream, that's the fish. I mean, the guides all take their clients bass fishing in that country down there. Sure. It's always been noted for that. And they used to sit on the liar's bench in the store. And I'd, a buddy of mine and I would go in the morning and be sitting there and have coffee with them, you know, and I'd say, how's the fishing? And they'd say, hellish. Oh, really? I said, that's funny. I caught a couple of big bass down in the river yesterday. Oh, did you? Yeah, I threw them in the woods. Well, they jumped on me. Like, you know, I'm telling you, they didn't like that too well. No. I was only kidding, of course.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So what's going on in the fishing world?
First off, if you didn't mention my shirt.
I like your shirt.
Do you like my shirt?
Not as much as the one you had on last week, but I like the color, though.
Yeah, thank you. I've had three compliments today wearing this shirt.
Yeah, that's
Could
a
you
nice,
believe that?
Yeah, what color is that? That's kind
I don't
of
know,
a,
kind of an aqua, I guess, or something.
That's,
I don't
yeah,
know.
That's a...
Do you know, I bought this from Beans months, maybe a year ago or two, I don't know. But I got it home and I couldn't button it up. So by God, I said, I'm going on a diet. And now I can button it up.
Now you can button it up.
So it's the first day I've worn it.
Oh, good for you.
And I'm going to have
All right. What's going on fishing-wise?
I even got some loose area here.
Well, we like your shirt, but what's going on in the fishing world?
Okay. I might wear it fishing tomorrow.
Well, you do that. Okay. Get on to the fishing report.
Well, I've been trout fishing a couple of times. And incidentally, talking about bass, they must be on the beds by now.
Oh, yeah.
Not only by now.
Oh, I would
month.
Think so, yeah.
Oh, I would
yeah.
think. And you must see him down there in the lake.
I've been so busy, I haven't even had a chance to look.
Man, you must fish him down there.
Oh, I have, but I haven't this year yet.
Boy, all those lakes down there are hot for bass.
You bet.
When they get onto the beds.
Yep.
But I've been trout fishing a couple of times, and I did want to mention that, we got some good trout fishing, but you know something? We get up in the morning, and it's cold, get up early, and went up the streams and down, nothing. You couldn't see a fish anywhere, no rises, no nothing. And then we had lunch, and then they started rising. And we caught all kinds of fish. And we did this two or three times. We'd get up early in the morning, you know, have breakfast, have a coffee and a donut, and drive to where we're going. And same thing, nothing until after lunch. So I guess the sun gets up, the water warms up a bit, and the hatches start, and the fish start feeding on them.
Yeah.
You know, on the emerges and the top water hatches and so forth. And the trichets, the little gray mayfly, that's the number one right now, has been for the last couple of weeks. And then, of course, there's some sparse. We were sitting on a dam having a sandwich, and we counted the different things that were hatching. And they were little black stoneflies. And there were also some small brownish, chocolatey brown caddis, very tiny, with tent-type wings, and ants, and flying ants, and it's amazing.
Well, it sounds like the trout are putting on the feed bag.
Well, they unbelievable.
Yeah,
while
good.
We were sitting on that dam, below that dam, there was just rising.
Yeah.
And, of course, we flicked the fly out there once in a while, and then we'd wait till they settled down. We'd get another one, and it was really something. And we went back to the places that we had been to earlier.
Yeah.
That didn't do anything, and we did very well.
All
so
right.
There you are.
Okay.
So that's my report, sir.
Okay, good. Just one quick question. Yeah. If you're on a diet, how come you had a donut?
Well, that's true. I also had an ice cream on the way home.
Oh, did you really? Well,
Custer
what
went
a diet.
Went, and he said, boy, you blew your diet. And I said, boy, you bet I did. But I lugging that canoe around and over dams and all this stuff. You wear it off.
You're right.
You sure do.
I couldn't agree more.
You
just
know
kidding.
That.
Just,
yeah.
just joking with you. Right. Okay, that wraps up Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal. Again, our guest tonight, we're going to be talking to Andy Good from the Atlantic Salmon Federation in just a moment. Then after that, later on the show, we'll be talking to the Pemmican Man, whose name is Dan Rogalski, right after the 7:30 break. The trivia question now, if you get the right answer, we're going to give you a package of shad darts from the Old Town Trading Post. This arrangement was made with the Bob Winginick a couple weeks ago, and we appreciate the Trading Post being willing to provide.
What is a shad dart?
A shad dart is it's a lure for catching shad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a lure, shad
lure. It's not something you throw at a target.
Well, you do, but you're hooked to a fishing rod.
There you go. Okay.
So anyway, here's the question. I'll let Bob ask the question, and he can be the judge of your answer. What's the question, Bob?
What do you call a baby porcupine? A baby porcupine. What's the name for that?
All right. You think about that. 1-800-966-1039. We'll be right back. Okay, we have Andy Good standing by from the Atlantic Salmon Federation. But before we get to Andy, we're going to dispose of the trivia question. If you have the right answer, we're going to make sure you get a package of shad darts from Old Town Trading Boats. Let's take a call here. Sean from Otis, you're on Maine Outdoors.
Good evening.
Hi, Sean.
Good evening.
What do you think the answer is?
Is it porky pig?
You say porky pig?
Porky pigs.
You know, that's not what we have on the...
That's awful close, but it's not.
Yeah, that's not the what we have here on the script, but that's not bad.
Not bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
All right, appreciate the try, Sean. Thank you. Okay, we have one other standing by, and it's not what Sean said, but he's close. Charlie from Garland, are you there, sir?
Yes.
Hi, Charlie.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Pretty good.
What do you think the answer is?
I think it's porky pet.
Porky pet.
What about
that, Bob?
Where
did you ever come up with that, Charlie? Now, you're absolutely correct, of course.
I read it somewhere, and it stuck in my mind.
All right. Well, good. And you're absolutely correct. Porky pet is the name of a young baby porcupine. And you've got the right answer. And I'm going to have to get your mailing address so the Old Town Trading Post can mail you those shad darts, okay?
Excellent. Thank you.
And if you'll stay on the line, our engineer will get your, Scotty Bates will get your address, okay, Charlie?
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for listening, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay. I think we're going to connect now with our first telephone guest.
Yes. I hope he's still there.
Are you there, Andy?
I am here. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for being with us. We appreciate you taking your time.
Great to be here, and I should say that the shad fishery on the Kennebec is a world-class fishery now in water from Waterville down to Augusta.
Is it really? That's good news.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting some shad up this way in the Penobscot as well. I don't know how plentiful they are, but I know they are catching them. That's great.
Yeah, that runs up to about 5,000 to 7,000 a year, and really take off over the next couple decades.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun. I caught them down in the Connecticut River, and they're a blast on a fly rod.
How are they to eat?
They don't eat too well.
I don't want to get sidetracked, but the shad roe was tremendous, and they're very bony like a pike, but if you can clean them, the meat, it's white, it's actually very sweet. I think they're delicious.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't realize that.
Maybe make a nice chowder.
Yeah. Andy, what is you're the regional director of ASF, is that right?
Close enough. I'm the vice president of U.S. programs, so I run our U.S. operations, fundraising, and project work.
Okay. And you live in Brunswick, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Nice to have you with us. I just for the benefit of listeners who may not know, I contacted you because Bob and I were both thrilled and fascinated by the new agreement, the Greenland Salmon Pact, and I thought it might be good to get you on the air here to kind of tell the folks at home what this is all about.
Sure. Yeah, well, thank you. When our young salmon smolts, when they leave our rivers like the Penobscot and Kennebec and other rivers, they head over to Greenland to feed for a couple of years. And, probably about 15 to 20% go to the Faroes, and about the rest of them go over to Greenland to feed for 2 years and fatten up, and then they come back here. And so the problem is over in Greenland, there's a subsistence fishery like there is in Canada, but then there's also been a small commercial fishery, an in-country commercial fishery. They can't export them, but they go out and they catch them and they freeze them. They sell them year-round in Greenland. And, that fishery has, it's not a big fishery because we don't have a lot of salmon left, unfortunately, anymore, but it's still one of those few factors we can control. We've had a couple agreements in the past, essentially to pay the Greenlanders not to fish, but we haven't had one for a number of years now. But over the past few months, the Atlantic Salmon Federation, working with the North Atlantic Salmon Fund, has arranged another 10-year buyout of that fishery, along with the buyout of the Faroese fishery as well. So it's, we think in this first year, so essentially there's not going to be any commercial fishery over there in 2018. So the first benefits that we'll see here back to Canadian and U.S. rivers would be 2019. Right now, the most recent numbers of their commercial quota, they took about 8,500 spawning fish. And that's the core spawning stock. I mean, we get, you know, obviously some of the fish that come back to Maine and Canada are grilse, which are just one C winter salmon. The ones coming back from Greenland are the two C winter. They're older, fatter, larger, and have a lot more eggs, and that's really the bulk of the spawning stock. So this first year of the agreement will protect 8,500, but hopefully as numbers hopefully rebound, that number would go up.
So put it simply, this was a financial expenditure. This was a buyout of the commercial fishermen, right?
It is, and you know, buyout may not be the exact word, but in that it's money that we put into a fund every year, and it goes to help the Greenlanders essentially implement some of their marine and fishery strategies. You know, and those include developing an inshore cod fishery. Their cod stocks are actually in pretty good shape. It's developing a lumpfish fishery. So it's money. It's not you know, checks don't go into their pockets, but this fund that it allows fishermen to come in and say buy nets or do other things to help develop and get into some of these other fisheries.
Okay, is there a price tag on this? I mean, what kind of money are we talking about?
Yeah, we don't. I guess you know, this year, in the past, it has been more public. We don't have a price tag that we're revealing, but basically, it's based on the size of the commercial catch in the last 5 years, and then sort of what a price per pound might be. So the Greenlanders had asked us to keep that number confidential.
Okay,
so
we're going to have to take a short break. Do you mind standing by with us?
Sure.
Okay, Andy, we'll be right back. Thank you, sir. Okay, you stay with us. Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and we're talking to Andy Good from the Atlantic Salmon Federation. If you have a question or comment for Andy, you can call us on our toll-free number, 1-800-966-1039. Are you still there, Andy?
Yes, I am.
Well, nice to have you back with us. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, and again, my hat's off to you folks for the wonderful thing you're doing. I think this is marvelous, and I'm given to understand that most of this is private money, right?
Yes, actually, 100% of it is private money that will be raised by the North Atlantic Salmon Fund and the Atlantic Salmon Federation.
Oh, that's great. One of the questions I think would be a normal thing to ask is, I'm aware that this has been done before but was not that successful. So I guess the question is, what is different about this, and is there some kind of a model worked up to suggest that this may work this time, and could you comment on that?
Well, I guess in the past, these two agreements, the Faroese one, I think, has actually worked very well. The Greenland one, last time it fell apart a little bit because, it's a little bit like the Wild Wild West over there in Greenland. And, the reporting of catches and things like that has been difficult to monitor. And so as a result, the catches crept up and we wouldn't find out till after the fact. And so we discontinued that agreement. This time around, it also, any fisherman, whether they're fishing personally or fishing, they won't be able to fish commercially, but everyone has to have a license. And to get a license the following year, you have to report your catch. And it's a much more rigorous program, so it's going to be a little bit more transparent than in the past. So, that's why this time around we sort of insisted that we would have better reporting and monitoring of what is being caught over there.
Well, that's great. So there's going to be more accountability than there was the time before.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What's the time frame for determining whether there's a positive impact from this project? Is it like 1 year, 2 years?
I'd say as early as in 2019. We could start to see something, and then certainly going forward from that. I mean, with one of the big things that we've been dealing with, Atlantic Salmon, been dealing with is the lower marine mortality, is the higher marine mortality, and so we have a lot of money going into research and tracking, trying to figure out what that black hole is in the ocean. But if the Miramichi, if the smolts that were put out, if 10% used to come back, now we're getting 3%. It's down to 2% actually this past year. So, if marine mortality ticks up like it did a few years back in 2011, 2012, then the numbers will increase. So sometimes it's hard to tease out, but certainly by eliminating this commercial fishery in Greenland, it's one of the few factors we can control and can only help.
Yeah. The character of the Penobscot River has changed drastically for a lot of things that have happened. If the salmon do start coming back, that's going to be make a positive effect, right?
Oh, sure. I mean, that Penobscot, I think over time we should see increasing, you know, before salmon, we'll see increasing, hopefully, recreational fisheries for striped bass and for shad, as mentioned earlier. Over time, Atlantic salmon would be tremendous. If we could get back a catch and release, a limited fishery at some point, I think it would be the best thing that could happen to the Penobscot. But certainly we've reduced the number of smolts being killed in that river by dams, and we're hopeful. We've also done a lot of work in the tributaries to open up some of that spawning habitat, so it's going to take longer in the Penobscot to recover. But last year we were up to 850 salmon, which is a little above the 5-year average, so we're trending in the right direction. I think we've got over 100 back so far this year.
Andy, this is Bob Lehman. As you know, back in the 70s and 80s, we had a moratorium, same type of thing as we're striking for here in Greenland. And the salmon increased in the Penobscot by tenfold. I mean, we had thousands of salmon. We had 4,000 and 5,000 a year there for several years during those years of the moratorium. In the Penobscot alone, do you think can we expect anything like that now after this, after a couple of years?
Well, as fishermen, we have to be optimistic. And so I would, so we did. In 92, I think we had 4,000 salmon back in the Penobscot. But
right.
You only have to go back to 2011. We had over 3,000 salmon in the Penobscot. And that had to do with the year before, something happened in the marine environment. We had higher survival, with more favorable conditions. And all of a sudden, we had over 3,000 fish show up. And places like the Narragansett had 172. And we had fish showing up in all these rivers. It was great. Great, but that just shows you how important the marine conditions are.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of the long-term prospects.
Right.
For salmon.
When you say marine conditions, can you be a little more specific? You're talking about the condition of the ocean?
Yes, and basically the reason salmon are going to Greenland is to feed on capelin, which is sort of a rich, oily fish, sort of like a herring. But
right.
They go over there, they fatten up, and they come back. And one thing we found over there is, there's been sort of a shift downward in capelin stock starting in the 1990s, and that hasn't reversed yet. And we think that is a principal factor in sort of the decline in some of the Atlantic salmon numbers coming back to North America. And that has to do, so then the next question is, so why have the capelin declined? Well, capelin feed on phytoplankton and zooplankton, and temperatures have changed up in the Gulf, in the North Atlantic, as we know, and the timing of those blooms have differed, and they feel like that may be affecting the capelin. So there's those type of bigger things going on in the North Atlantic that we think are impacting Atlantic salmon.
Like everything, I guess it's complicated, right?
Oh, yeah, no, it is. Although we now have the ability, we've been for 20 years now tracking salmon. Starting this year, we'll be tracking adult salmon in Greenland that we live capture. And we'll now be able, because we can track salmon from North America, from the Penobscot to Greenland.
Oh, no kidding.
We'll be able to track those fish back from Greenland all the way back to Maine and into Canada.
That's
so
exciting.
We are learning a lot more. And we can also tell when they're predated, we can tell exactly what it is. Was it a poor beagle shark? Was it a bluefin tuna? What it was. So that technology is increasing dramatically.
Okay, that's exciting. We have a caller who may have a question for you, Andy. Let's take him. Good evening, Eric. You're on Maine Outdoors with Andy Good from the Atlantic Salmon Federation.
Hey, good evening. This is an interesting topic. What makes me interested in this is we used to have a camp in Millbridge next door to Cherry Field, and in the 70s, we could watch all kinds of people catch salmon on a regular basis in the Narragansett, and it seemed like all of a sudden, the salmon numbers just really tailed off, and, the logging practices were totally different then, the mills are all in place. I was wondering if there had to have been something different. And I'm looking back and thinking to myself, isn't that about the time midwater trawling for herring came into practice?
Well, that's a good point. Well, you also, you still back then had pretty large commercial catches off of Greenland. For instance, actually this week in Portland, Maine, the North Atlantic Salmon Conservation Organization, which is the international treaty governing salmon, that was formed because of those high catches in Greenland and the decline. So the Narragansett and some of those rivers down east were being affected by that big commercial fishery. Certainly, and then over, then since that time, there's large, herring fisheries, and there's mackerel fisheries out in the North Atlantic. And one thing we have found is that the smolts travel in about the same water column or same depth as those fisheries, and there certainly has been some bycatch of smolts. A few years ago, there was an international effort to go out and try to track these smolts, and we did in the mackerel fishery retrieve a lot of, we did retrieve bycatch of smolts. So, yeah, and that's something NOAA Fisheries is trying to work on and trying to get a better handle, because certainly one thing we've learned from our tracking is that these smolts, they take a path. You can identify the route they take, and if that's the case, then you can potentially have, trawlers avoid that corridor during that time. So that's one of the things that's being looked at presently.
Oh, that technology with the tracking is pretty amazing. That's a great tool. Now, I would look, not that I want to shut down any fishery, but don't believe in utilizing resources, but to think that, on a totally unrelated basis, that I, as a, a fisherman, can't keep a damn cod, because the cod fishery is in such bad shape, but the damn midwater trawlers can have tons and tons and tons of haddock bycatch. That whole fishery drives me nuts. So I was just curious if there was any parallel or, any connection to that, because,
a lot of times people like with salmon, it could be death by a thousand cuts. There could be a lot of factors. That could be one. I do think this changing marine conditions in the North Atlantic seem to be the biggest driver at the moment.
Appreciate your call, Eric.
Hey, thank you much. And
good questions. Thank you, sir. Okay, we have another guest standing by, so we're going to have to wrap it up, but we sure appreciate you being with us, Andy. I think you've been very informative, and we'd like to have you back sometime.
Oh, I know. I'd love to come on anytime, talk about some of the main rivers or what's going on in Canada with salmon. That'd be great.
All right. We'd love to have you back. And again, thank you very much, and good luck with the program. We'll be watching it closely and having our fingers crossed.
All righty. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Andy.
Yep. Bye-bye. Okay. That was Andrew Good, who's a regional director for the Atlantic Salmon Federation, talking about the Greenland Salmon Pact. We're going to be talking to our pemmican man here in just a minute. Right now, though, we have to make a dollar. And Bob and I want you to know that this program is sponsored every week in part by General Appliance and Brewer, the place to go for all of your appliance needs. Doesn't matter if you're talking about what, Bob? Gas refrigerators?
Oh, heavens.
Gas lights? What else? Gas ranges?
Compost toilets? Ride the wave, baby.
You bet. They have a complete line of both used, new and used appliances. They install everything they sell. They stand behind it. And the fellow to talk with over there is the owner-operator, Al Elkin. He's a great guy. We've been done business with him for years. He's always been helpful whenever I've had to troubleshoot something with my gas refrigerator up to one of my remote camps. And we recommend him highly. So check him out over there. They have a telephone if you want to give him a call. If you're in the market for a new or used appliance and you're thinking about it, you can call Al at 989-3714. Now, if you want to go over and visit the store, where are they located, Bob? How do they find it?
Well, you take the old bridge from Bangor, and at the light, you grab a right and a left, and you're right on Center Street in Brewer. And they have, on the right, they must have half of the block or more.
They do?
Yes, sir. And they sell a lot of gas appliances, and they also have a lot of electric appliances as well.
They do. And the prices are fair, always fair.
Certainly are.
Right?
And he also comes out and makes repairs.
He does. He will.
Even you don't have to buy it there. Give him a call if you've got a gas appliance or electric appliance and you need some work done on it. Give him a call.
Okay. 1-800-966-1039 is the number if you want to talk to us. And we'd love to have you on the program tonight if you've got a comment, either for our past guests or the one we're about to talk with. General Appliance and Brewer, we patronize them and urge you to do so as well. We're standing by now. We have, do we have Mr. Dan, the pemmican man?
Yes, he should be right here.
Are you there, right, Dan? Here. Hi, Dan. How are you tonight?
I'm well, and you?
I'm doing well. I had a bite of that pemmican bar before I came to work, and I'm fired right up.
You go for a week now.
Yeah, you bet. Dan, nice to have you here. We told the listeners before we hooked up with you a little bit about what you're doing and why we've invited you to be on. And I've found in kind of casual conversation, a lot of people don't have a vaguest idea what pemmican is. Would you explain that to our listeners?
I'm not sure I do either, but my basic understanding is that it was a staple food for American Indians, and they used game that they had caught, berries that they had picked, all sorts of different ingredients, and they used that when they were traveling. They ground it up, they mashed it, they dried it until it was, you know, almost rock hard, and it's pure energy. And they, from what I understand, put it in little leather bags and ate it as they needed, you know, sustenance during the day or on long trips, and, you know, it served them well.
So it's kind of a 19th century version of what we call the energy bar today, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. What's the name? Where does the name pemmican come from? Do you know?
No, I didn't look that up. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I imagine it's an Ojibwe or one of the Algonquin Indian names, but I'm not sure at all, Paul.
Probably a Native American term, yeah. You're in New Hampshire, Dan, right?
Yes.
Yeah. What seized you to want to, and I can tell you from talking to Dan and sampling his product, that there's a lot of work involved in this. You wouldn't believe the components. I'm going to have him explain that to you in a minute. But first, could you tell me and our listeners, Dan, how did you happen to undertake this project?
Well, it's all your fault.
Oh, my fault.
Okay. There was a fellow that wrote in a query into your magazine saying, you know, what to do with leftover elk or something. And then somebody else wrote in and said, why don't you make pemmican? And it turned out that I had just read an article about pemmican being made by the Sauk and Fox Indians out in Iowa. So I sent a note back to you saying, you know, like, here, read this. And I think you did read it.
I did. It was fascinating, yeah.
And didn't think anything more about it, other than you had said, if you ever make it, let me know. And I was looking for something in the freezer and found, you know, this huge trove of berries that, you know, time and age had rendered almost useless, but I'm very frugal, and I didn't want to throw them out.
Okay.
And I said, well, I have game meat, I have the berries, let's see what else goes in pemmican. And I started doing some research, and it seems like just about anything that you can dry, you can put in your pemmican, and as long as you mix it with enough fat, it's going to suit what you need for energy and for sustenance.
Now, are you an amateur cook? Do you play around with other recipes, or is this just something?
Oh, yeah, I've been cooking since I was a hellion when I was a kid, and my mother got me a job in a restaurant when I was 13 just to stay out of trouble, and I've been cooking ever since, and I do the cooking in the family, and I enjoy it. I'm always trying something new, and there aren't too many things I haven't eaten, so it just falls in line with that stuff.
Yeah, you know, one of the reasons I've always been fascinated with survival food is I've done a number of elk hunts out west where you have to carry your own pack, so you try to travel as light as you can, and the challenge for everybody has always been because you use up so much energy, yet you can't afford to carry much weight. So you got to try to find some way to keep the weight down, but keep the calories up. And I think you may have found it in this pemmican. Thing is really loaded with good stuff. Can you tell our listeners what's in this pemmican?
In this one here, I actually have the little thing I wrote up about it in front of me, so I can tell you exactly.
Okay.
I have beaver, deer, bear, moose, beef tallow, beef fat, parched corn, pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds, wild rice, pecans, black walnuts, blueberries, cranberries, blackberries, choke cherries, and sour black cherries.
Unbelievable. And
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I tried to figure out exactly what this was. So the ratio is essentially one part fat, and two parts meat, and three parts of the nuts and berries and fruits and grains and stuff. And when I got all done, I really thought it was just a little bit not as sweet as it should have been with all the berries and stuff. So I found a company in Canada that pulverized somehow or freeze-dried maple syrup, and it came out like confectioner's sugar, very fine powdery sugar. So I repackaged all the pemmican with a coating of that on it, and it makes a big difference. But if you were looking for, you know, like we were saying, trail food or something that you wanted to pack, I think this would be ideal, because I ate one of those little squares for lunch one day last week, just to, you know, make sure it wasn't going to kill me before.
You were the guinea pig, right? Yeah.
Well, no, I'd eaten it before, and I was amazed that, like, I wasn't hungry the rest of the day, and I eat a lot. I'm a big fat guy, so it was like I couldn't imagine. And then I went back, I thought about, you know, it's... The thing that really surprised me when I was drying all this stuff, like, I had a lot of meat, and when it was all dried out, it was pitiful. I think I estimated it was like a 10-to-1 reduction in weights.
Wow.
From, like, if you take a hunk of, you know, deer or wherever, and you dry it to the point where I had to dry it to, it loses everything.
Okay, let me ask you this. Now, everything that's in this, all the components in this pemmican bar are dehydrated, right?
Yes.
Now, what about the issue of spoilage? The ones you sent me, you're very generous. You sent me a whole bunch of them, and I have them in my freezer. And I sampled one today and shared it with my wife and her friend and my son Scotty. And the ladies said, "Yeah, that's not bad." They, when they saw that it had, you know, beaver and bear in it and tallow, they begin to, you know, they eat a lot of salads and stuff, so their nose kind of crinkled up. But my son Scotty tried it, and he took a big bite of it. He said, "Geez, Dad, that is great." So what about spoilage? Is there now in the 19th century, when the Native Americans were carrying this around in a little leather pouch, I think it was a powder, wasn't it, that they added moisture to, or was it?
I don't know. I haven't been able to get a definitive thing. I think it was a paste.
It was,
and
yeah.
You know, because of all the fat. The fat's not going to let it powderize or pulverize, whatever.
Okay, yeah.
But I think I had talked to several people about this, and one guy brought up the thing. I said I was afraid about the oil from the nuts and maybe some of the fats going rancid. And he said, you know, years ago, people didn't worry about rancid. You know, they had a half a beef hanging in the barn, and they cut off as they needed, or if somebody shot a deer, even if it was green, you know, they ate it. They didn't. That wasn't an issue. It was
right.
What they needed for energy, and people weren't anywhere near as picky as they are now. It was food, and you ate it.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, I don't know if it's going to spoil. I put so much time and effort into it. I don't want to take it out of the freezer until I'm about ready to use it. But
yeah.
I'm going to take some hunting with me in the fall, and at that point I won't be able to, well, it'll be cool then, but I'm not worried about it. I don't think it'll go bad.
Okay, that's interesting. It'd be fun to find that out, because, you know, if you're going to take this into the woods with you, you don't have a Yeti cooler with you, so the stuff is going to thaw out.
Yeah, it'll be in my day pack, and
yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. So we don't. You haven't talked to a dietitian or anybody who's an expert to know whether this stuff would... I mean, there's fat in there. I don't know. I don't know if that type of fat would go bad or not. It's dehydrated,
no, I mean,
right?
I've had a can of when I was rendering bear fat, and I wanted to save some for lubrication because supposedly it's the best thing in the world for guns and fine mechanisms,
right,
and stuff. So I had put a gob of it in an old soup can out in the barn, and like, that thing's been there like 3 years, and I keep sniffing it, and it smells just as good as the day when I rendered it. So, like, I'm not sure the bear fat's going to do anything, and I don't know. I mean, the beef tallow, I rendered that pretty good, too, and that came out almost pure clear. It looked like, you know, Karo syrup,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure either one of those is going to go. If anyone's going to go, it'd be the oil and the nuts.
Oh, I see. I didn't realize that. Yeah.
You know how, like, if you buy a bag of almonds and you don't eat them all, after
yep.
a while they start tasting funky,
yep.
but, I mean, you're still going to eat them because you pay good money yep. for them.
Have you, anybody in your family, have they tried the pemmican, and what was their reaction?
My wife tried it. I had a couple other people try it. My hunting partner tried it. He's all gung-ho, so I know if I don't end up eating it, he'll eat the rest of it, because he was really enthralled with the whole idea, and he shot half the animals anyway. So,
yeah. Have you ever thought about trying to market this stuff?
No, I wouldn't dare. You wouldn't. There's no way that with you know, cooking stuff in your home kitchen, you can get away with under some sort of homestead rules. But
yeah, there's
know,
all kinds of
meat
liability
got
issues.
Wild game in it. I don't think I could sell any of the game.
No, you couldn't. Probably not. Well, it's a noble experiment, and I tip my hat to you. I think it's wonderful that you've done this, and I'm glad to know that I sparked your interest. That's great. And I have the bars you sent over, and you went to a lot of effort to get them to me frozen. I appreciate that, and they will be consumed. And before we leave, we're up against the clock, but we have a caller who may have a question for you, Dan. Let's take it. Good evening, caller.
Sure.
You're on Maine Outdoors with the Pemmican Man, Dan Rogalski. Go ahead,
Mr. Rogalski. This is Diane Reynolds. I just called to straighten out the record here. I had three pieces of the pemmican, and I liked it. And I also like wild meat. And my friend liked it, too.
Well, she didn't take... She did. She took a pretty small nibble, Di.
I took three. And I liked
it. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
And Paul knows I liked it. He just took some liberties there.
Oh, my goodness. I'm in the doghouse again, Dan.
Not anymore, because I got to straighten it out with your friend there.
Okay. All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right. That was my better half, Dan, straightening me out. And she did take a big bite of it. And the other gal kind of nibbled at it a little bit. I don't think she was so crazy about it. But I could be wrong. But my son, Scotty.
He's off the hook.
Yeah. And we appreciate you being with us. I think we're about out of time, aren't we,
Yes, you got about 30 seconds or
okay.
less.
Thank you for being with us, Dan. Good luck to you, and we'll talk to you again sometime, I hope.
Very good. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And next week, Jim Thorne will be your host, and I'll be up on the West Branch fishing for those salmon, and Bob and I will be back in 2 weeks right here on
Maine Outdoors.